Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. Artificial intelligence has the potential to increase both the quality and the quantity of work that a learning business does. And there are a variety of factors that might speed up or slow down a learning business's adoption of AI. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Capacity is one of the five domains in our learning business maturity model. Capacity deals with the people and the technology a learning business has in place, the capabilities and the competence staff, contractors, and consultants bring to the table, along with the abilities of relevant software, systems, and processes.
There's a quantitative and a qualitative aspect to capacity. How well can the people and the technology do the work? That's the qualitative side. How much can the people and the technology do? That's the quantitative side of capacity.
And artificial intelligence, in our view, has the potential to change both the quality and the quantity of work that a learning business does. And so we want to focus on barriers to the adoption of AI and the potential accelerators of AI adoption in this episode, number 410.
So there is going to be a growing expectation that individuals, whether those are employees or contractors that are serving a learning business, make use of artificial intelligence in the work that they do.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that does seem to be clear about how things are evolving around AI. There's enough AI woven into enough places right now that certainly seeing it mainly as a productivity tool just kind of bubbling up within learning businesses. So using Microsoft Copilot or Zoom's AI companion, that's just naturally going to, I think, start happening, already is happening, regardless of whether organizations are really focused on AI and being strategic about it and how it fits into the future of their learning business.
When you mentioned productivity, and I think productivity emphasizes the quantity side, it's this idea that you can have the same people on the team, but they can get more done by making use of some of these AI tools. So again, it's more on the quantity side than necessarily on the quality side. And I think the quality is a little bit of a deeper process and is probably likely to take longer for learning businesses to really figure out what it looks like to deeply incorporate artificial intelligence into organizational-wide operations, to make use of it, to create and deliver learning products. All of that seems a little bit more fraught in terms of how it plays out and how it ties into strategic goals.
Yeah, it's not going to happen as organically and sort of by default, the way that having Copilots in your Microsoft Office suite is going to happen. It is going to require a lot more attention, and it's going to require, I think, in most organizations, breaking through some barriers that are going to be there to slow down adoption by learning businesses. And so that's where we want to focus first in this episode, is around those barriers that learning businesses may be facing. Because we will say, in our experience so far, people are talking about AI, they're interested in it. Some of this, like, you know, using Copilot, using Zoom AI Companion is going on, but we're not seeing a whole lot of, you know, aggressive, deep adoption of AI at this point. And I think it's because of some of the barriers we'll discuss here.
And so we have six barriers in mind as we run through these. We encourage you to listen with an ear towards which of these really do seem to be barriers in your organization, in your learning business. And of course, also think beyond the barriers that we are going to mention. What other barriers is your learning business facing in terms of adoption? So that's just a kind of note in advance. a way that you should be listening, or a way that we encourage you to be listening. So the first barrier that we'll mention is a barrier that shows up in all sorts of areas whenever you talk about making change, and it is simply cost.
That's right. To really integrate AI into your operations, your strategy is going to have some cost associated with the software and with everything that's going to have to go with the software to use it well. I mean, we've got the free version of ChatGPT out there that folks can use. It isn't the best or the most advanced version. You really have to pay for access to get that. So while you can use free AI in some cases, often there is that need to pay, especially when you start to think about that quality side versus just the quantity.
Yeah, and to just make a point about the availability of what's free versus what you have to pay for, there's a podcast episode that Ezra Klein did with Ethan Mollick. We'll be sure to link to that in the show notes for this episode. But Ethan Mollick makes the point that when ChatGPT first came out, that maybe it was about as good as a sixth grader at writing. The free version, which is ChatGPT 3.5 at this point, is as good as a high schooler or maybe a college freshman. And then GPT-4, which is what you have to pay to get access to, is as good as a PhD in at least some forms of writing. So right there, you can already see, like, if you're really interested in quality, that cost investment almost becomes a necessity.
Yeah, you know, and that's relatively small to get a ChatGPT subscription, even for your whole team. But again, as you start to expand and get into other tools and the capacity to use them, the costs start to proliferate pretty quickly. And you got to reckon with those. And those are the new costs. But I think what may even be a bigger issue for many learning businesses is those sunk costs that they already have in their existing technology and learn tech investments.
Right. A lot of learning businesses have a learning management system that they invested heavily in, not only in terms of the software costs, but again, the people time just to figure out
how a lot of pain,
how to integrate it, how to make it work with your processes, how to get everyone trained on it. So you have the cost of legacy systems plus all the surrounding processes and education that you've already spent essentially money on for your team. And so it's going to be a little bit hard probably to divert funds away from some of those legacy systems until there is a crystal clear, pretty fast path to the return on investment. And so, you know, that's kind of, we're seeing that as a barrier.
So that's cost, both the new cost and dealing with those sunk costs that you already have. Now, number two is perceived lack of demand from learners. And this might take a little explaining, but you know, you hear about these AI-driven learner scenarios that are all about personalization and dynamic and everything else. And they're really predicated on this notion of what could be characterized as the ideal learner. So someone who really appreciates and proactively seeks out learning experiences that are personalized, that do dynamically adapt to their needs.
And not to be overly cynical, but to be realistic.
Realistically cynical.
To be realistically cynical. That's good. You know, a lot of learners simply aren't that ideal learner. They have a need. They're trying to get their job done and they need some piece of knowledge or a new skill to do it. So they're really after that. And maybe they don't care so much how personalized or dynamic the experience is. Or maybe they just have to check the box if they have some sort of CE requirement. And again, then in that case, they really just want to check that box and move on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of organizations, individuals who are creating learning programs, they like the idea of serving that ideal learner, but I think they know intuitively, or they feel like they know intuitively, that maybe we're not there yet. Maybe this isn't the time to be aiming that high with what we're doing. Now, that said, and this may sort of already point towards the accelerator camp that we're going to talk about in a little bit, the growth and enthusiasm for platforms like, say, Duolingo, which seems to have a pretty strong fan base.
I'm one of them.
You're one of them. And I've used it too. In fact, it keeps bugging me to come back. the enthusiasm around those types of platforms suggests that there might be more latent demand than many learning businesses appreciate at this point.
So we've talked about cost as a potential barrier. We've talked about perceived lack of demand from learners as a potential barrier. A third barrier is lack of time. I think it's very easy to say that learning businesses should make more time to explore artificial intelligence, to poke around and understand the possibilities, run some pilots, do some experiments. But I have met very few learning business professionals who feel like they have time to do that sort of piloting and experimentation and just poking without a really clear return on investment, given all of the other things on their plate.
Yeah, usually plenty of other things to do for the individual, for the team, and saying that you're going to make this a priority right now can just be a stretch in a lot of instances. So lack of time. And then number four, a lack of understanding.
Yeah, so there can be a skills gap. Even if you manage to carve out time or you have people on your team who do actually have some time to devote to it, there may just be a skills gap there. Those people may not really understand artificial intelligence capabilities and the mechanics behind them. And then that can lead to a barrier to adoption because it can be like, fine, play with this. But if you don't really kind of understand how the systems work and what they might do for you, that kind of open-ended experimentation might not result in much coming of it that's actually useful.
That's true. I mean, it really is easy to get into ChatGPT-4 if you pay for it and get it to do some things, but then really understanding how you get it to do the things that you most want it to do in a productive way, there is a learning curve on that. And yeah, it goes back to that time issue. The time to get the understanding often isn't there.
And it also relates to an absence of a strategic or maybe even a tactical framing for AI exploration. I mean, if the directive that is passed down in a learning business is experiment with AI, again, that leaves so much open to that individual who's playing with it, and you're going to get pretty widely different results depending on, again, how good that individual's understanding of AI and its possibilities are.
Yeah. I mean, classic problem with innovation in general, there's always that imperative, go innovate. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. We haven't actually developed a strategy and a plan around doing that. So that's lack of understanding. The number five, content concerns.
And this is kind of an umbrella for us. There are a number of things that we're categorizing as content concerns. Think about accuracy and hallucinations, for example. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's a very big deal in the context of learning businesses where often the content absolutely has to be reliable and factual.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're in a healthcare, for example, a medical, you can't be putting stuff out there that is not completely reliable and accurate. So definitely, you know, the valid concerns around that does have to be addressed. There are concerns around data privacy and security, particularly around sensitive learner data that might be coming in. A lot of data churning through AI, and exactly what's happening with all that data isn't always clear.
Which leads to then ethical concerns around what data do you have the right to share with an AI tool that your learners have given to you. And tied up in those ethical concerns, there's also concern around bias.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the kind of thing that's always making headlines, I think, around AI. But the bottom line is even the developers don't know exactly how it all works. There's a bit of a black box in these large language models and other types of AI. And, you know, the data used to train these large language models has the chance to, you know, perpetuate stereotypes or exclude or disadvantage certain groups of learners, depending on what goes into that training, and perpetuating equity issues and all sorts of other issues that we're already wrestling with before AI, we don't need to have exacerbated by something that could take it to even bigger scale than it is now.
So a lot of barriers wrapped up under that umbrella of content concerns. And then the sixth barrier that we'll mention, this is the final one that we have brought to the table today to discuss, is culture.
Mm-hmm. Culture is always a big one. There, you know, resistance to change. There's a lot of comfort with traditional models that can slow down AI adoption. I mean, this happens with any new technology, any new approach coming into any sort of business. And certainly there are many areas of we've always done it this way. I mean, we've seen even resistance to advances that are driven by learning science within the learning field. Certainly, you know, you throw in something that feels a little less certain or harder to understand like AI, and yeah, that resistance is bound to be there in many organizations.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of inertia that can prevent the adoption. Just again, like you were saying, we've always done things this way and they're working fine. Why do we need to change? I think silos, which can also kind of come from culture can further exacerbate adoption of AI, because even if one person or one team within a learning business or an overall organization figures out an effective use of artificial intelligence, will others in the organization even know about it? And will, if they know about it, will they be encouraged to adopt it or apply it in their area? So I think silos are another aspect of culture that can really be a barrier to adoption of AI.
So to loop back and kind of note all of those again, the barriers we're seeing are around cost, both new cost and sunk cost, around a perceived lack of demand for learners. So maybe it's just not time yet to do this. A lack of time on the part of the learning business and its staff. You just don't have the time to do this. A lack of understanding, just really, this kind of relates to the lack of time potentially, but just knowing enough to be able to really get the full potential out of AI. The fifth one, content concerns around IP issues, privacy, ethical considerations, bias. And then finally, number six, the one that's always there in any big shift in technology or strategy or anything else, is just culture. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
So we've looked at barriers to AI adoption. We'd like to talk next about accelerators. So what might speed the adoption of artificial intelligence in learning businesses? And we have five that we'll bring to the table. Again, we encourage you to listen to these five and think, okay, which ones of these could actually accelerate the adoption of AI in my organization? And also think about what else might accelerate the adoption of AI in your organization.
And so the first one we're going to list is vendor leadership. This may particularly apply in the case of those legacy systems where you've got sunk cost and you know, what the vendors are going to do there. But I think just overall, vendor leadership is going to be important here. If vendors, technology platform providers start integrating AI into those existing systems or investing heavily to smooth the path into to new systems, that can make a big difference.
Yeah, and I think so far, at least what we've seen in terms of efforts to incorporate AI into existing systems, it seems kind of relatively rudimentary, you know, kind of more maybe on that productivity side of things and the quantity rather than the quality side. So, you know, incorporating GPT to help generate content ideas or do a first draft of assessment questions, for example. And that's useful, but it's not sort of, it doesn't really alter much about kind of how things are being done.
Right, right. So hopefully, you know, it's hard to remember. I mean, in some ways it's late days, but in other ways it's early days because, you know, the whole ChatGPT shift, really, that really marked a turning point, which didn't happen all that long ago. So you could argue we're still in somewhat early days and vendors are really starting to catch up and accelerate their efforts. So I think we probably will see a lot more vendor leadership coming in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years, but that would be a big factor to speed adoption. The next one would have to do with just the broader market.
Yeah. So again, this is kind of an umbrella point for us, but you know, you can imagine, for example, if a learning business is being outpaced by key competitors, that's going to really urge them to get their act together and invest more in artificial intelligence. If more explicit demand starts coming from learners around artificial intelligence being used in the products and services that you're offering, again, then that sort of market demand is going to really push a learning business to move faster to integrate AI.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, generally a fear of sort of diminished reputation or relevance, that if you're not keeping up with whoever the Joneses are in your, you know, competitive set, it just doesn't reflect well on you. So those sorts of market pressures can come to bear. And we also think about kind of, you know, the partnerships and collaborations that can occur out there as kind of as being part of this broader market perspective.
Yeah. So kind of like with the vendor leadership piece where you can, a learning business can take advantage of what a vendor of a learning platform might be making available. Another way to kind of potentially leapfrog or accelerate your own adoption of AI is by partnering or collaborating with someone who already is further along that AI path than you are. So you really seek out new relationships, you know, might be in the academic field, for example, and you can share knowledge and resources and use cases, and maybe that again speeds the adoption and application of AI.
So vendor leadership, number one. Number two, just changes in that broader market and environment that are going to impact how you're thinking about AI. And then number three would be another major shift in AI itself.
Right. You mentioned that in some ways these are early days, some ways maybe late days, but with the introduction of ChatGPT, I mean, that really got the world's attention because I think it allowed many people to see firsthand what the potential for this generative AI was. And so if there were to be some other sort of shift like that or some sort of a event, that really could speed adoption even further.
Right. And one that's out there potentially right now is the broader release of Sora, S-O-R-A, which is basically the video version of ChatGPT. So using generative AI for video creation, it's in, I guess, beta or sort of limited distribution right now. I have not been able to get my hands on it so far, but I've heard fairly incredible things about it. And if you suddenly have this tool that allows you to crank out really, you know, relevant, high quality video very easily, that could be an inflection point. We don't know. We'll see exactly how much impact that has. But that's just one potential example. ChatGPT was in many ways that proverbial tip of the iceberg because so much had been going on underneath that for so many years. And that's just sort of what became sort of visible and caught the eye of the general public and suddenly created this big shift. Something else is going to bubble up, no doubt, you know, within the next 1, 2, 3 years.
So the fourth accelerator or potential accelerator that we see around adoption of AI is regulation and guidelines. I think this would help in terms of clarifying a lot. Like we were saying earlier around some of the barriers, there's just a lot of sort of lack of understanding about what AI can actually do and how it works. So as regulations are rolled out, as clear guidelines are developed, that's going to help build trust in artificial intelligence, and it's going to make it clearer how to deal with some of the barriers that we talked about, things like intellectual property and what can or can't you own, around bias, around ethical issues. And if you have regulatory bodies developing those guidelines and overseeing things, then that takes the burden off of the individual learning business to have to work through legal opinions with a lawyer on their own. And then they're really allowed to think about, okay, within these rules, within these guidelines, how can we make use of it?
Yeah, and this is, you know, almost certain to happen on a global stage too, which gives me a little more confidence that it will happen, because if it just had to happen in the United States right now, given what the political environment is, I'm not so sure. But, you know, just like GDPR had such a big influence on how we think about web privacy and security, regulations and guidelines are going to be coming from all over the world, and hopefully they will help to address some of those barriers that are giving organizations caution right now.
And then the fifth and final potential accelerator that we wanted to talk about is simply a good business case for AI.
Always good to have a good business case for things. And this, of course, will go back to, you know, things like cost and understanding learner demand and all of those barriers that we spoke to earlier. A good business case is going to address and figure out how you work your way through those. And, you know, and it's going to address our classic triumvirate of reach, revenue, and impact.
Right. Again, the business case can sort of be broken down into, you know, how is AI going to help you with your reach? How is AI going to help you with your revenue? How is AI going to help you with your impact? On the reach side, AI potentially helps you to do more with the same resources, which could translate very naturally into the potential to reach and serve more learners, even without greatly changing the size of your team, for example.
Right. On that revenue side, you know, if you're able to do the analysis and see that potential for long-term savings despite upfront cost or new revenue generation because it allows you to develop products more quickly, get them to market more quickly. But just getting to that point where you can quantify, you can put the financial framework around it, that certainly could help with speeding the investment.
And then around impact, you know, AI offers the potential to unlock some of those holy grails of learning that we've been talking about for a long time, decades at this point, things like personalization, things like just-in-time or point-of-need learning. And if you can do that, that's going to allow you to better serve those learners. It's going to allow you to have more impact as a learning business. And if you can begin to see that, that can be part of that good business case for investing and adopting AI.
Yeah. And I mean, in the same technology that's going to make those things possible is also going to make it possible to get the data from them and know how effective they are, which goes back to regulation and all of the content concerns and everything else. But the potential for, you know, really being able to serve the individual learner well, the organization well, the broader communities in which the individuals and the organizations work, and tracking the data around that and whether it's actually having an impact or not. We've never been at a point before, I think, where that was as possible as it's starting to be now.
So basically a good, strong business case for AI that helps you kind of quantify and qualify the potential for impact on reach, revenue, impact. That can help accelerate adoption. The fourth point was around regulation and guidelines, as if those are rolled out, that can help with the speeding the adoption of AI. Third, we had mentioned another shift in artificial intelligence, some sort of development kind of akin or similar to the release of ChatGPT. The second thing we had talked about in terms of an accelerator was just broader market changes. So, you know, as competitors adopt AI, or as learners begin to clamor for AI, or other partners and players becoming more attuned to AI, that's going to push learning businesses to also pay attention. And then we started our list of potential accelerators with vendor leadership. So if you have tech companies, for example, that invest in adding AI to their existing systems or developing new systems that then you can sort of relatively seamlessly transition into, that will help with adoption. Artificial intelligence has the potential to increase both the quality and the quantity of work that a learning business does. And there are a variety of factors that might speed up or slow down a learning business's adoption of AI.
At leadinglearning.com/episode410, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you haven't yet, please do take a minute to subscribe.
We'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Jeff and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange with a colleague, or you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode410, you'll find links to connect with us on X, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.